Where Tinker Creek flows under the Sycamore Log Bridge to the tear-shaped island, it is slow and shallow, fringed thinly in cattail marsh. At this spot, an astounding bloom of life supports vast breeding populations of insects, fish, reptiles, birds, and mammals. On windless summer evenings, I stalk along the creek bank or straddle the sycamore log in absolute stillness, watching for muskrats. The night I stayed too late, I was hunched on the log, staring spellbound at spreading, reflected stains of lilac on the water. A cloud in the sky suddenly lighted, as if turned on by a switch. Its reflection just as suddenly materialized on the water upstream, flat and floating, so that I couldn't see the creek bottom or life in the water under the cloud. Downstream, away from the cloud on the water, water turtles smooth as beans were gliding down with the current in a series of easy, weightless push-offs, as men bound on the moon. I didn't know whether to trace the progress of one turtle I was sure of, risking sticking my face in one of the bridge's spider webs made invisible by the gathering dark, or take a chance on seeing the carp, or scan the mud bank in the hope of seeing a muskrat, or follow the last of the swallows who caught at my heart and trailed it after them like streamers as they appeared from directly below, under the log, flying upstream with their tails forked so fast. But shadows spread and deepened and stayed. After thousands of years, we're still strangers to darkness, fearful aliens in an enemy camp with our arms crossed over our chests. I stirred. A land turtle on the bank, startled, hissed the air from its lungs and withdrew into its shell. An uneasy pink here, an unfathomable blue there, gave great suggestion of lurking beings. Things were going on. I couldn't see whether that sir rustle I heard was a distant rattlesnake, slit-eyed, or a nearby sparrow kicking in the dry flood debris slung at the foot of a willow. Tremendous action roiled the water everywhere I looked. Big action, inexplicable. A tremor welled up beside a gaping muskrat burrow in the bank, and I caught my breath, but no muskrat appeared. The ripples continued to fan upstream with a steady, powerful thrust. Night was knitting over my face an eyeless mask, and I still sat transfixed. A distant airplane, a delta wing out of nightmare, made a gliding shadow on the creek's bottom that looked like a stingray cruising upstream. At once, a black fin slit the pink cloud on the water, shearing it in two. The two halves merged together and seemed to dissolve before my eyes. Darkness pooled in the cleft of the creek and rose, as water collects in a well. Untamed, dreaming lights flickered over the sky. I saw hints of hulking underwater shadows, two pale splashes out of the water, and round ripples rolling close together from a blackened center. At last I stared upstream, where only the deepest violet remained of the cloud, a cloud so high its underbelly still glowed feeble color, reflected from a hidden sky, lighted in turn by a sun halfway to China. And out of that violet, a sudden enormous black body arced over the water. I saw only a cylindrical sleekness. Head and tail, if there was a head and tail, were both submerged in cloud. I saw only one ebony fling, a headlong dive to darkness. Then the waters closed and the lights went out. I walked home in a shivering daze, uphill and down. Later, I lay open-mouthed in my bed, my arms flung wide at my sides to steady the whirling darkness. At this latitude, I'm spinning 836 miles an hour around the Earth's axis. I often fancy I feel my sweeping fall as a breakneck arc like the dive of dolphins, and the hollow rushing of the wind raises hair on my neck and the side of my face. In the orbit around the sun, I'm moving 64,800 miles an hour. The solar system as a whole, like a merry-go-round, unhinged, spins, bobs, and blinks at the speed of 43,200 miles an hour along a course set east of Hercules. Someone has piped, and we are dancing a tarantella until the sweat pours. I open my eyes and I see dark, muscled forms curl out of water with flapping gills and flattened eyes. I close my eyes and I see stars, deep stars giving way to deeper stars bowing to deepest stars at the crown of an infinite cone. Still, wrote Van Gogh in a letter, a great deal of light falls on everything. If we are blinded by darkness, we are also blinded by light. When too much light falls on everything, a special terror results. Peter Fruchin describes the notorious kayak sickness to which Greenland Eskimos are prone. The Greenland fjords are peculiar for the spells of completely quiet weather, when there is not enough wind to blow out a match and the water is like a sheet of glass. The kayak hunter must sit in his boat without stirring a finger so as not to scare the shy seals away. The sun, low in the sky, sends a glare into his eyes, and the landscape around moves into the realm of the unreal. The reflex from the mirror-like water hypnotizes him. He seems to be unable to move, and all of a sudden it is as if he were floating in a bottomless void, sinking, sinking, and sinking. Horror-stricken, he tries to stir, to cry out, but he cannot. He is completely paralyzed. He just falls and falls. Some hunters are especially cursed with this panic and bring ruin and sometimes starvation to their families. Sometimes here in Virginia at sunset, low clouds on the northern or southern horizon are completely invisible in the lighted sky. I only know one is there because I can see its reflection in still water. The first time I discovered this mystery, I looked from cloud to no cloud in bewilderment, checking my bearings over and over, thinking maybe the Ark of the Covenant was just passing by south of Dead Man Mountain. Only much later did I read the explanation. Polarized light from the sky is very much weakened by reflection, but the light in clouds isn't polarized. So invisible clouds pass among visible clouds till all slide over the mountains. So a greater light extinguishes a lesser as though it didn't exist. In the great meteor shower of August, the Perseid, I wail all day for the shooting stars I miss. They're out there showering down, committing harakiri in a flame of fatal attraction, and hissing perhaps at last into the ocean. But at dawn, what looks like a blue dome clamps down over me like a lid on a pot. The stars and planets could smash and I'd never know. Only a piece of ashen moon occasionally climbs up or down the inside of the dome, and our local star without surcease explodes on our heads. We have really only that one light, one source for all power, and yet we must turn away from it by universal decree. Nobody here on the planet seems aware of this strange, powerful taboo that we all walk around carefully averting our faces this way and that, lest our eyes be blasted forever. Darkness appalls and light dazzles. The scrap of visible light that doesn't hurt my eyes hurts my brain. What I see sets me swaying. Size and distance and the sudden swelling of meanings confuse me, bowl me over. I straddle the Sycamore log bridge over Tinker Creek in the summer. I look at the lighted creek bottom. Snail tracks tunnel the mud in quavering curves. A crayfish jerks, but by the time I absorb what has happened, he's gone in a billowing smoke screen of silt. I look at the water, minnows and shiners. If I'm thinking minnows, a carp will fill my brain till I scream. I look at the water's surface, skaters, bubbles, and leaves sliding down. Suddenly, my own face reflected startles me witless. Those snails have been tracking my face. Finally, with a shuddering wrench of the will, I see clouds, cirrus clouds. I'm dizzy. I fall in. This looking business is risky. Once I stood on a humped rock on nearby Purgatory Mountain, watching through binoculars the great autumn hawk migrations below, until I discovered that I was in danger of joining the hawks on a vertical migration of my own. I was used to binoculars, but not, apparently, to balancing on humped rocks while looking through them. I staggered. Everything advanced and receded by turns. The world was full of unexplained foreshortenings and depths. A distant, huge tan object, a hawk the size of an elephant, turned out to be the browned bough of a nearby loblolly pine. I followed a sharp-shinned hawk against a featureless sky, rotating my head unawares as it flew, and when I lowered the glass, a glimpse of my own looming shoulder sent me staggering. What prevents the men on Palomar from falling, voiceless and blinded, from their tiny vaulted chairs? I reel in confusion. I don't understand what I see. With the naked eye, I can see 2 million light years to the Andromeda Galaxy. Often I slop some creek water in a jar, and when I get home, I dump it in a white china bowl. After the silt settles, I return and see tracings of minute snails on the bottom, a planarian or two winding around the rim of water, roundworms shimmying frantically, and finally, when my eyes have adjusted to these dimensions, amoebae. At first, the amoebae look like muscae volitantes, those curled moving spots you seem to see in your eyes when you stare at a distant wall. Then I see the amoebae as drops of water congealed, bluish, translucent, like chips of sky in the bowl. At length, I choose one individual and give myself over to its idea of an evening. I see it dribble a grainy foot before it on its wet, unfathomable way. Do its unedited sense impressions include the fierce focus of my eyes? Shall I take it outside and show it Andromeda and blow its little endoplasm? I stir the water with a finger in case it's running out of oxygen. Maybe I should get a tropical aquarium with motorized bubblers and lights and keep this one for a pet. Yes, it would tell its fission descendants the universe is 2 feet by 5, and if you listen closely, you can hear the buzzing music of the spheres. Oh, it's the mysterious lamplit evenings here in the galaxy, one after the other. It's one of those nights when I wander from window to window looking for a sign, but I can't see. Terror and a beauty insoluble are a ribband of blue woven into the fringes of garments of things both great and small. No culture explains, no bivouac offers real haven or rest. But it could be that we are not seeing something. Galileo thought comets were an optical illusion. This is fertile ground. Since we are certain that they're not, we can look at what our scientists have been saying with fresh hope. What if there are really gleaming, castellated cities hung upside down over the desert sand? What limpid lakes and cool date palms have our caravans always passed untried? Until, one by one, by the blindest of leaps, we light on the road to these places. We must stumble in darkness and hunger. I turn from the window. I'm blind as a bat, sensing only from every direction the echo of my own thin cries.